Okay. Hopefully you guys can, there aren't too many of you, you're not too far away, so you can hopefully see this okay. You can see what we're planning to talk about. You should have the notes. There's three pages, a front and side, and then another front. That's I'll generally be kind of going through that. This should coincide with that. Introduction's just going to be kind of a quick fact. Roger, you can't give away the answers on that because he may have heard it. And then I'm going to give kind of a biblical foundation of around stewardship and money, which really forms the goal of what we're trying to pass on to our kids and to teach them. So as I go through that, sometimes I'm tempted to try and apply it to myself, or you know, you could apply it directly to yourself. And I have to remind myself that the goal of this is to learn how do you transfer that, like I said in my prayer, and we've mentioned that, to take that and to share it and to teach our kids some of these same principles. So after I walk through those, which includes what the Bible tells us about money, and you can see the source, the use, and our attitude towards money, I'll just give kind of a quick overview because you see that on some biblical websites. They really kind of hammer home on a few key points. And then hopefully at least half our time will be more in the application section where we can do more interaction. As you can see in here, I've thrown out some questions, and the goal is not just for me to talk, but for you guys to really share ideas around that. I certainly have some ideas because I've been thinking about this a little bit, but I'd like to hear from you guys. And then as I was doing some preparation, I came across just different comments that are kind of other catch-alls. I put them as other considerations, just some things to think about, again, not only for your own life, but as you teach your kids. So having said that, just because I'm up here hopefully teaching something, that does not mean that I have all the answers. It certainly doesn't mean that we do all of this in our household. So as I talked to AJ a little bit as I was prepping, she asked me, she said, well, do you do this or do we do this? I said, well, no, not all of it. She said, why are you teaching on it then? But so this is not to say that, this is the ultimate standard and, the Andersons do this. We don't. Hopefully we do some of the things. We certainly don't do all the things. So it's even a good reminder. A lot of us have kids that are out of the house or, in that phase or we're entering that phase. And I realize, I've only got a few months left with our oldest, and our others are closely behind that. So really an opportunity to instill some of these ideas or these lessons where maybe we haven't done that yet. So with that, by way of introduction, we're going to do kind of a little bit of a trivia or fact idea here. So I've got five key words or key concepts, and I ask, how many verses do you think can be found in the Bible about each of these? So we will start with the main topic that we're here today is about money. These are just in alphabetical order. How many verses do you think in the Bible talk about money? Just take a guess. How many verses mention money? 1,000. That's a pretty good guess. Anybody else? The actual number is like 2,350 verses about money. Okay, I mean, that is what it is until we maybe hear some of the other numbers. It's hard to put that into context. So money is our baseline. Over 2,000 verses talk about money. Let's go with heaven. How many verses do you think talk about heaven in the Bible? We know money's coming in around 2,000, a little over 2,000. What do you think about heaven? There's 420 verses talking about heaven. So quite a bit less, 420 verses about heaven. What about sin? You would think that's probably mentioned all throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament. How many verses do you think talk about sin? It's actually, my source said 480. So it's actually in the same range as heaven. Let's try another one. We'll go with God. You can go big on this one. That's pretty obvious. So that's pretty close, 4,000, 3,970. So just under 4,000 for God. I don't know if I assume they use all the different names of God, but almost 4,000 talking about God. And then lastly, love. So where in the range? You got God at 4,000, you got heaven and sin in the 400s. Where do you think love, and then money's in the middle at 2,000. Where do you think love is? Similar to God? Actually, what I found, it said 550. So And I had a few other comparisons here, but I found that very interesting. Concepts that we hear about, we preach about, we learn about sin and love and heaven. I don't know, what does that mean as far as verses actually talking about that? But I guess the point is, money is obviously referred to a lot in the Bible, which means a couple things maybe. It means that it's important. And that was certainly my thought in the notes, is that money as a whole is important. The other thing is, it's practical. I mean, we need to hear about it because it's part of our day-to-day lives. And I think because of that, it's an area that I think a lot of us stumble in, that it can create all kinds of issues, whether it's relationship issues or the love of money, or it becomes a focal point or an idol, or we abuse it. So we need a lot of verses about money. So clearly God and the Bible and truth certainly feels that that money or that concept of wealth and assets is an important one that we need to learn about. So just a little bit of fun background there. So as we get into the biblical foundation, I mentioned we're going to talk about the source of money. So where does money come from? The use of money? How do we use it or how should we use it? And then our attitude towards money. So we'll try and go through these somewhat quickly rather than having you kind of flip through a lot of verses, because I've got, you know, a verse here and a verse there all over the place. I've put them all up on the slides that you can read. So here, our first source of money, as you read these, Deuteronomy 8:18 and Romans 8:32, what is your takeaway as far as where do we get money? I won't read those to you because you guys can all read. Yes, so this is kind of your quote-unquote Sunday school answer. The ultimate source of money is God. That sounds churchy. I'm sure, you know, it's something I think we would all acknowledge in our heads. If you stop and think about it, you know, what does that really mean in our day-to-day lives? If he's the, and not just source of money, he provides everything. I mean, you guys all know this. But not only does he provide everything is his and we're a steward of it. So, you know, again, this is where it's easy to take this to a personal level and say, am I using a TV and a phone in a way that honors God? Because if it's his and I'm a steward of it, you know, am I using it effectively? You could do that with a lot of things, your home and your car and even just your day-to-day spending of money. Are you using it effectively with that in mind? So again, it's one thing, you know, we hear that, yeah, everything is God's. But when you, I mean, I think it would be difficult to do, but if we did on a daily basis, you know, take that to heart and say, okay, how am I using my money and my resources and all that I have? Is it to honor God? Because after all, it is his and I'm just stewarding it. But the point is that that concept is one that we want to pass along to our children. And obviously that would look different at different ages. But to kind of reaffirm and confirm in their minds that everything is God's and we are simply kind of taking care of it for him, or we're stewarding it for him. So whether that's something as simple as they have toys as young children, or even then, you know, as they become teenagers and they have electronic devices, computers and phones, are they using those? Not only are they kind of carrying them and maintaining them in a way that's honoring to God, but are they using them? So are you sharing toys with friends or siblings? Are you using your phone and computer in a way that's honoring to God? You know, that concept of taking what God has given us and using it effectively and wisely certainly can really promulgate everything, a lot of different aspects of our life. A second source of money, and so if kind of everything comes from God is kind of this overarching idea, this is really the practical day-to-day answer. Where else do we get money? There's two verses in Proverbs. In all labor there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. And then the second one is whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense. So where does money come from? It comes from work. God made us to work. There are many other verses that talk about, you know, working brings blessing and brings reward. Here it actually uses the words profit or plenty. You know, again, the lesson, and you're going to maybe hear this one emphasized a number of times, but the point, not only for us, obviously, as adults, I think we all work or have worked, as we pass this along to our children is, you know, at what point do they start working? What does that work look like? And if, you know, the last comment there is, if they want money, if we want money, they need to earn it, whether that's chores around the house, and we'll talk about this as we talk about different ages, as they become old enough to maybe get a job or to, even if it's not a formal job, to do these one-off things like cutting grass or babysitting or different ways of helping people. And then ultimately, hopefully, they will have a job at some point where, you know, money will be the compensation for that. So it's easy, I know, at least for me as a parent, you want to not only take care of your kids, in some ways you want to spoil them. You want to show your love to them by doing things for them or maybe giving them things. And of course, the balance is there. You don't want them to be entitled to just think that, hey, if I ask for something, I'm going to get it. Or maybe there is even a delay. Well, maybe I'll see it for my birthday or for Christmas or something. But you want to instill this concept that if they want money or if they want things, they need to earn it and to work for it. So on the flip side of that, where does money not come from? I found this interesting as I've studied for a lesson like this, that there's verses around this. It says wealth obtained by, well, that one's maybe not surprising. Wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but one who gathers by labor increases it. So that actually reinforces the idea of work. But it talks about gaining money or wealth by fraud. And then the second one, Proverbs 28:20, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. So the way I've interpreted that is that money does not come from dishonest means or from get-rich-quick schemes. Hopefully those are obvious. Maybe it's the get-rich-quick scheme that, well, maybe you're tempted by either one of those, but if you hear about, I don't know, I think I've shared this with some people, that if you hear about maybe a stock investment, that, oh, this thing is a sure thing, it's going to take off, and you start seeing dollar signs, it's tempting to do that. Or, you know, that's the whole idea of the lottery or of gambling, is that by putting in $10, you could get some much larger amount out of it. The Bible actually has verses that say that is not wise. It's not a source of where money would come from. So again, that certainly goes hand in hand with a prior idea. So as we teach our kids that, look, if you want money, don't look for the quick solution. Don't look for these get rich quick schemes. Of course, it all goes back to stewarding your money wisely. If you're gambling, if you're playing the lottery, you're clearly throwing your money away, and it's not using that, not stewarding that money effectively. And it goes against really all three of these, the use of God's money, working for your money, and not falling prey to this, these get rich quick schemes. So once we have money, how do we use it, or what do we do with it? Our first priority comes from a couple of verses in Deuteronomy 16. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of the Lord your God that he has given you. 2 Corinthians 9:7 says, each one must give as he has decided in his heart. So what's the first thing we need to do, Richie? What's the first thing that we need to do when we have money?
Bless the Lord.
How do we do that?
By giving.
There you go. What stuck out to me on these is it's not optional. And again, you guys have probably heard that, but it says every man shall give and each one must give. And Beth, you were saying before we started that you were brought up to tithe. So that same lesson is certainly one that hopefully we have passed on to our kids, or we certainly need to pass on to our kids, is that as we get money, and you could even say, even if you get birthday money or Christmas money, if you get a gift, again, if it's all coming from God, to look at that and say, well, I'm instructed to give back a portion of that. You might be a little bit flexible when it comes to gift money, but the idea is if they earn any money, whether it's a small job or a larger job, to instill this mindset that you want to give back. And hopefully, I mean, obviously there's good reasons for doing that. First of all, I think it reinforces that idea that it's God's money and you're simply stewarding it, so it recognizes that idea. It's a way to say thanks to God. Obviously, you know, hey, you've given me this, whether it's a grandmother that wants to give me $20 for a birthday or whatever it is, it's a way of saying thank you. And then, of course, it's a way of worshiping him. You know, we hear that, you know, we're worshiping through song and through prayer and through even through teaching and through giving. So all of those are good reasons. So this is certainly a key concept that we want to teach our kids as they start receiving money. A second one, as far as what else do we do with our money? This one might be a little bit tricky. Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. And then in Luke 14, it says, for which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? And you can see the rest of it there. For the sake of time, I'll go ahead and jump ahead that the purpose of these verses is it talks about the fact that we need to plan ahead. From a financial standpoint, we would say you need to make a budget. Or the whole concept there is to really spend your money wisely or effectively, to know how you're spending it, to make plans. You don't just, hey, I got a $100 check and I'm going to, you know, whatever, go to Target or go to a sporting goods store or go to a craft store, whatever you want to do, and just blow it. You need to think about how it is you're going to spend that. And again, that certainly when kids are young, that's a new concept. If they get an allowance or something, I don't think they're naturally going to think, okay, I need to think about what I'm going to do with this. That will take some training to give and to plan some other things, which we're going to see here. So one other thing, or I should say, what other things should we do with our money? 1 Corinthians 16, it says, on the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and save as he may prosper so that no collections will be made when I come. And in Proverbs 21, it says, precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. So the concept here, besides giving and besides planning, we need to save part of our money. And really those three concepts, as far as using money, are really key. If you go to like a Dave Ramsey website or some other Christian websites, you'll see giving, saving, spending. Those are really the three, which hopefully that makes sense. If you've got an elementary age kid, it's a pretty simple concept. If you get some money, we're going to give some back to God. Let's save a little bit for whatever it might be. And then, hey, here's some money that you get to spend. And then obviously that whole concept becomes more complex, or the numbers get bigger as the kids get older. One other quick comment on what we should not do with our money. Romans 13:8, owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. And then in Proverbs 22, it says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. So here are a couple of verses that reinforce the idea that we should avoid debt. Of course, I think the exception that most people would agree with is to buy very expensive items. Ideally, that would only be a house. You know, that's a whole different discussion for adults as far as taking on debt, but again, for kids, you start, I guess, teaching this concept. So we have three high schoolers. I think you all know that. And what we find is as their social activities pick up, they might be going out for whatever. I think Brooke was at Culver's last night with some friends after a basketball game. They're doing things where it's $5 here, it's $10 there, that they need to be in a position by planning or saving or doing whatever so that if they're out, that they're not necessarily borrowing from friends. Now, our kids have had to do that, but if that happens, you want to certainly pay them back, preferably the next day or certainly the next time you see them. That's not really debt, but it still is that same concept about the borrower being a slave to the lender. There's an obligation that creates. If Richie lends me $100, what does that do to our relationship? Every time I see him, I'm thinking, oh, I owe him $100. I don't have it on me. He's going to ask about it. And that obviously escalates as kids get older, the dollar amounts get older. As you become an adult, not only do the dollar amounts become bigger, but the problems can really become exasperated, which I'm sure you guys have heard about and are aware of. But very explicit verses in the Bible to avoid debt, which, again, hopefully goes hand in hand with everything we've talked about so far. Real quickly, just a few slides on our attitude towards money. I know there's a lot of words here, but this section of verses talks about what should our perspective be on the money we have. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10, it says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world and cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content." And then it continues to talk a little bit more. But hopefully you picked up on the key word there is contentment. Again, these concepts tie together. If everything we have is from God, he has given us our things, our wealth, our money, specifically for us. You know, he's given me different things than the Strubings and then the Halls. And so that certainly makes me unique. And if that's what God has chosen to give me, I need to be content with that. So, you know, this could be difficult for children because all of us are selfish. Maybe kids are a little bit more vocal about it, but if they see a toy or a phone or an electronic or something or basketball shoes or whatever it is that other kids have, the temptation is to say that I want it. And it's this lack of contentment because they see something they want. So this is an area that we'll certainly want to be aware of, I think, in kids is, are they content? And to remind them of these concepts that, hey, God has specifically given us what we have and we need to be content with that. Oh, by the way, if you do want more, if you want these shoes or this whatever, this item, you can work to earn money. I mean, there's obviously that can lead to some other good conversations. But certainly our attitude should be one of contentment. God obviously knows what he's doing and he is going to meet our needs. And as we are content and we trust in him, we get the excitement of maybe watching how he meets different needs as that arises. So another attitude, this is actually on the negative side, what our response to money should not be. Hopefully you see it right there in the beginning of each verse. Proverbs 28:25, a greedy man stirs up strife. And then in Proverbs 15:27, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household. Going back real quickly on contentment, the way the notes are worded, contentment actually kind of breeds or leads to godliness. So that is, as you would hope, that it leads to a very positive outcome there. Whereas on the flip side, if you are greedy, you can see there's some pretty troublesome words that are in these verses. A greedy man stirs up strife, and somebody who is greedy brings troubles into his own household. Again, that should be fairly intuitive or obvious, and that as you're greedy, you're really focused on yourself, and that tends to kind of disrupt a household or an environment there. And then lastly, one other attitude that we should not have, I'll just summarize it there with Philippians 4:6, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Matthew says something similar about not being anxious, which is certainly a temptation. We are used to having things, spending money, we think we need things, and if the money's not there, or if an appliance breaks, or if the car gets in an accident, whatever it might be, we tend to worry about that. And again, there's a reminder that if it's all God's anyway, again, he's going to take care of us. So with that kind of background, again, like I said, those are really concepts that hopefully they're easy to, we can apply them to our own lives, and then really those are key principles, as I've summarized here, to teach our kids. So the idea is that they need to work to earn money. This idea of as you have money, you need to give, to save, and then to spend wisely, and then in doing all that to avoid debt. So those are really, as we teach our kids, those are the really key concepts that we want to focus on. So with that background, now I want to hear from each of you a little bit more instead of me doing all the talking. but you've got so much to offer, Richie. So let's try and apply some of these. And I just thought of a few questions. Maybe you have some more, which we can talk about in the middle of or at the end. So the first question that I thought of is maybe when do you start teaching kids about money? You guys have any thoughts on that? When should we start teaching kids about money? As I was doing some studying for this, and I think it ties into all of those comments, kind of when I say a consensus, several websites seem to think that really kind of school age is kind of a good benchmark to think about. I think, Steve, that goes along with what you were saying. At the age of 4 or 5 or 6, they should be old enough to distinguish between a quarter and a Cheerio. They probably have some of the opportunities that Chrissy was talking about, or that Richie, that you were relating to, where they might be prone to throw a tantrum and to ask for something or to ask for money, and they begin to be selfish. So one thought I had was, tying it into school age, is that if they're at school, I mean, I guess if they're homeschooled, this wouldn't directly apply, but if they're at school, they're now interacting with other kids, so they're going to be more exposed to, hey, I don't have that, or they've got something different than me. So they're just more aware of maybe what they don't have or what they do have, and you start, I think you could see some of that selfishness creep up, so you know, whether it's in the form of a tantrum or just questions. And in doing that, whether it's at a school or even at a church, there might be opportunities as you make more friendships at the age of 4, 5, or 6 for birthday parties. So now maybe you're out buying gifts for other people. And certainly now the whole subject of money could come into play. If you're going to go out and buy a gift for a birthday party or even receive gifts, that begins some of those conversations. I would suspect that because they're not eating their quarters like Cheerios, that you might, if you do allowances, that might be roughly an age that you start thinking about starting an allowance as well. Obviously, I would assume it would probably start fairly little, but when they reach an age, and if your family does allowances, obviously, if you start giving them money, you want to have some of those conversations about teaching them about money. So again, all that kind of goes hand in hand. Second question, how do you teach kids about money? And we'll take these in order. I've listed them all here, but we've got different age groups. Hopefully you would agree, and I've kind of alluded to the fact that different ages, you're dealing with different dollar amounts, different issues, different things that they might buy with the money. So elementary school age, so I have roughly ages 5 to 9. What do you think we should be teaching elementary school kids as it relates to money? So Steve, one thing I like that you said was making it visual, especially for those younger kids. If you throw out the idea of giving or spending, I mean, they can't relate to those words, but if you have, like you did, these three little banks, and so now there's also the visual piece of giving is, hey, it's a reminder that I get to give to God every day, and hopefully there's some excitement around that. They take whatever it is, their dollar or their coins, and they bring it to church. So there's that reminder. And then for savings, if it builds, they can physically see some growth there. If whether it's a bank account, that's not as visible, but if they do go there periodically, they can see the balances are growing. If it's something in their room or in the house, they get to physically see it increase in size. There's more coins or more bills in there. And of course, the spending depends on their personality. That one might always be empty, or that one might maybe spill over into the savings one. But and then you talked about allowance and chores, and that's another key topic as well, because you're right, there should be some basic expectations. And obviously different families could do this differently, that for younger ages, you know, you would have age-appropriate expectations. So, okay, if you're really little, you need to take your clothes to the laundry room, or you need to put your dishes either in the sink or in a dishwasher, or do something with your dishes after a meal. Basic things. Again, I'm talking kind of really young kids now. And that's really the basis of, I guess those are the basic expectations for an allowance. And then maybe there are some chores around the house that are above and beyond that they would get paid for. So, if they're not expected to cut the grass every week, if that's maybe dad's chore, but if they want to help out, maybe they'll get some money to do that. Or if something is not typically their chore and they do it, maybe they do get some extra money there. So there is, you do maybe need to delineate as far as what's expected of them versus, you know, what actually earns some extra money there. Another point is that at that age, obviously, is you're really just building the basics of these concepts, the giving, saving, spending, and working. So Steve touched on them all. I think we've all kind of mentioned it. Another thing to keep in mind, even at the younger age, and you guys can all probably relate to this, is your kids are watching you. So set an example of this. If you're teaching them about saving and giving and spending wisely, and then you're not doing that, if they aren't aware that you're giving at church, or if they're not aware that you're saving or what you're saving for, or how you're saving, or if they see you spending foolishly, you know, they're watching that probably more than what they're actually listening to. Okay, what about, I call them the tween years, from 10 to 13. Anything different that you would teach your kids as they're kind of in that middle school age group? So some other thoughts or concepts that I saw as I was reading was, and you kind of alluded to them, is at that age they can start to learn kind of the opportunity cost of different things, that if I buy X, I can't get Y. So that's kind of the age where, okay, now I do have money and I want to go spend something. I want this Lego set, but I also want whatever, some snacks or something, that they might have to pick or choose. So it's trying to teach them priorities and being able to make decisions, that there might be different dollar amounts involved. Hey, you can get 6 of those or 1 of those. So there's that idea. And another one, in addition to what you've talked about, is They've hopefully been doing some savings for a while. You can now talk about maybe short-term and long-term savings that, hey, if you want this Lego set and it's $50, it's going to take you whatever, depending how much they work or how much money they can bring in, might take you a few months to get to that. If you want a $300 item and maybe a new gaming system, that's going to take you a lot longer and it might be more sacrificial. You got to use all your birthday money, all your Christmas money, and then some. So you can start differentiating between kind of magnitudes of items and then what the ramifications are in savings. For the sake of time, I'm going to try and skim through these others, or really maybe just skip them. The whole idea with teenagers and college is that it's similar concepts of working, giving, saving, spending, and it becomes, maybe for lack of better words, more adult-like. So by the time you get to college, they need to be aware of credit cards and how to use credit cards wisely and not bring in debt. The whole idea of savings, can become more complicated. Once they're out of college, you've got insurance ideas and maybe investments or retirement. This whole idea of saving takes on a whole different notion. The items become more expensive. Maybe you're saving for a car. Again, that all leads to maybe down the road you might save for a house. Again, everything gets kind of bigger and more expensive. So you want to kind of build up to that. Probably in the teenage years, well, you introduced a bank account early on, but if there's one where they're maybe a little bit more interactive, whether it's a checking account or something, that might be somewhere in the teenage years where if they do have jobs and there's a regular kind of inflow or outflow of money, you'd bring in a bank account, and it starts teaching some of that responsibility. Probably in college, that I know some people really like budgets and some cringe at it because it's confusing or too much work. That college age is probably where you start. If you're able to train your kids about budgets, that would be kind of a time to do it because it's really preparing them for maybe life after college or adulthood. So some thoughts on that. Number three, how do you teach kids the value of a dollar? Yeah, so the same idea as kind of this balancing or this scale, and that was the concept I wrote down is, different work brings in different money and different items cost different money. So it's not just different work, but also Chrissy's point, the amount of work, it's all obviously interrelated. So yeah, if they see, if they're picking between two items, one that's $200 and one that's $20, different amounts have different costs. Okay, and if I know in order to do that I need to cut grass and I get $10 a lawn, okay, I can do two lawns or 20 lawns. Well, I can do two lawns on a Saturday afternoon. I'm going to go do that and go get that item. So it's this whole balancing scale of, kind of equating or translating the work into dollars, which then translates maybe into items that they would like to buy. Number four. How do you teach kids the importance of money without prompting or promoting a love of money? Money is, and to some extent, it's really a tool to buy food. I mean, it's a convenience item because, if we go back in history, whatever, if there wasn't coins, people would barter and they would exchange things. You talked about that with the plastic fruit. I got all the yellow fruit. I'll trade you three yellow for two of your green fruit or something. So instead of bartering, we now have this money. Again, this is getting kind of very practical maybe, but it's a tool to make our life more convenient. So I don't know that you would dive into that too much with your kids, but if you at least have that kind of mentality that, look, money is really just allows us to, get food or to put gas in our car or to help serve missionaries and to serve other people. Oh, by the way, to your comments, all of you, that we're called to love God and love people, so this tool that we have of money allows us to do that. Just trying to keep that whole thing in perspective that it's not about the money and building up money and all the pleasure that comes with that. It's about using this tool and this gift that comes from God. I think we've touched on some of these. Setting an example, one idea if you've got younger kids is just to try and incorporate things into the daily routine and to give the kids some ownership of them. I thought those are some things that were applicable and stuck out there. So, all right, thank you.